Okay, let's call the meeting to order and thank everybody for coming today. There is another committee meeting as well, and the clerk will note the role as people come in. Early on in the last legislative session in meeting with Bill Marks, we talked about the need a little bit to have an understanding of the role and how we use federal funds. And we suggested that we, sometime in the interim, hold a hearing on federal funds, their use, what the legislative role is in dispensing and appropriating federal funds as they come in. And so this is a result of that particular conversation. And I hope that we're able to gather some information from the Ways and Means perspective on the role of federal funds, how they come into the state, what our responsibility as a legislature is to be able to appropriate them. So Bill, I know, has a lot of information prepared to us, along with the rest of the fiscal staff. And there are also people in the audience that from different departments, I know, that are able and willing to answer questions as we go through. So as Bill and the fiscal staff give their presentations, if you have questions, please feel free to ask the questions. If they can't answer them, people, I think, in the audience from the different agencies will be able to answer them. What we'll do today is have just an overview, and then some federal funds from the state agencies. And one of the questions asked, how many state employees are supported by federal funds? We'll have hopefully some information on how the federal funds are appropriated and what happens to when federal funds come in during the interim as well. So Mr. Marks, I guess with that kind of a brief overview, we'll turn it over to you and the fiscal staff, and with our thanks for being able to put a lot of work into this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and members, pretty much as you've expressed, our goal today is kind of twofold, to give you somewhat of an overview of the federal funds that are received in the state and some general sense of where those federal funds go, and then also to talk about the process for legislative review of federal funds and what the legislative involvement in that is. And you've got some materials in your packet that I'll be using. With that, the first one is there's a handout that has a big pie chart on the front, and it's labeled All Fund Spending by Fund. It's the one that's also on the TV monitor. And this is a chart you've probably seen before. This is updated for the last legislative session and special session information. But in the big picture here, this is showing that federal funds on this chart make up about 23% of what we would call the all funds budget. The biggest item you can see there is the general fund is about 60%, and then some of the other ones show up, and a lot of them are in that other category down at the bottom. Federal funds received by state agencies here total about $7 billion per year. And the federal funds, as this would show, then represent about 23% of the budget. The federal funds information is a bit... It's not as clear to track throughout the state budgeting system, because while most federal funds are in a category called federal funds when we look at the state budget, not all of them work that way. And the most obvious example is federal highway funding that comes into the state is not tracked as a federal fund as much as it is. It goes into the trunk highway fund, and it's tracked as trunk highway funds. So on this particular graph, I point out right away that this transportation category, this slice down here, actually includes some federal money. because that federal money comes directly in and goes into the Trunk Highway Fund as opposed to being tracked as a federal fund. So this isn't all real straightforward. It gets a little confusing at times, and I've attempted to keep it very general and pull all that together, but you need to know it's a little more complicated than this when we actually get into it. And that's also the case. The highway funds would be the biggest example of that, but there are, for example, federal funds that go directly into the Game and Fish Fund and a few other funds. This is showing a general perspective and it's generally accurate, but there are specific exceptions in various cases. In this handout, following the graph, there are two pages that look like this, and it's just an attempt to show over a 5-year period federal funds by agency. First of all, the categories here are not the House Fiscal Committee category, rather they're the Conference Committee categories from last session. So, for example, you won't see a Heritage Finance here. There's an Economic Development category, but the groupings are by the Conference Committee structure from last session. Most of this data is from the state's consolidated fund statement. Some of it is from various other sources, and I pulled together in this chart. A note here, much of this information is going to be substantially revised in the budget forecast that comes out at the end of November. This information was what agencies projected for last session, so the projections were done January, February perhaps, and then they were built into the budget, and as better information becomes available, the numbers change. Another thing to keep in mind here is the timetable when we're thinking about federal funds. The federal fiscal year starts October 1st. As has been typical in recent years, there is not a federal budget in place yet. The federal government's operating on a continuing resolution, which is basically takes whatever the funding level was last year and carries it forward. So even at this point in time, a month and a half or so into the federal fiscal year, we don't know exactly what federal funds are going to be for this year because those appropriation bills at the federal level are not finalized. Particularly fiscal years 2008 and 2009 on this chart are estimates, and the estimates will get better as the information gets better. This information shows the dollars for each agency. As I suggested, fiscal years 2005 and 2006 are probably should be good information. 2007 was a estimate from earlier in the year, and then 2008 and 2009 were the estimates that were used for the session. One note on here, the federal funds received by the University of Minnesota do not pass through the state treasury and are not tracked at the state level, so they're not on this chart at all. We did get an estimate from the University of Minnesota that in fiscal year 2007, they're estimating $407 million of federal funds. So you could add that number to the 2007 total here. 2007 total is about $7 billion here, so it would be 7.4 if you had the University of Minnesota in. Again here, where to draw the line on federal funds becomes somewhat of an issue. Another example of something that's not in these charts are the financial aid to higher education students, because that's money that basically goes directly to students. That's not in here. Social Security payments to individuals aren't in here. So this is looking at federal funds that come through state agencies in one way or another, and then are distributed or used at the agency level. The last page in here is a graph shows federal funds by agency, and you can see here the Department of Human Services handles by far the largest amount of federal funds of any state agency, roughly 62% of the total. If you looked at the numbers, it's in fiscal year 2007, it's about $4.6 billion that passes through the Department of Human Services. Department of Transportation is the second highest on here at about 11%, and this chart does include federal highway funds. This calculation was done a little differently than the other one, so this does include federal highway funds in the total. Department of Education at about 9%, And then it drops down to health at 5%, and indeed the Department of Economic Development at 4%, and then about 1 or 2 or 3% for other agencies. And then there are a lot of them in the others category, the 2% that includes all the other agencies there. So this just gives an overview by agency, the levels of federal funds, and there are a lot of agencies that get relatively small amounts of federal money.
Over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marsh, going back to your comments about there not being a federal bill and the fact that we're going to have a forecast at the end of November, how is that handled in moving forward for the November forecast?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it would be taking best estimates of what's going to happen. Agencies would estimate the federal funds that are going to be available are going to be provided and build that into the forecast. To the extent that might affect state appropriations, those implications would be built in there. You have to make some assumption of what's happening at the federal level, and I think a continuation budget is the continuing resolution type projection is probably what's built in. You may want to ask that question of an agency like Human Services later on and get some sense of how they look at it. But I would guess that you look at kind of a continuation level budget.
Then how much lead time do these agencies need if in fact all the budget bills were passed on Tuesday in Washington, D.C.? Would there be enough time for those changes to be reflected in the November forecast?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, probably not, because it's not only Congress passing the budget, it's the agencies at the federal level then have to implement it, essentially. And to the extent there would be changes in programs, that may take rules or it may take other directives to implement it as well.
So, Mr. Chair, it may even be safe to say that even by the February forecast, we may be still going off of estimates.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, yes. And particularly for the second year of the biennium, because that's what Congress would deal with a year from now.
On that line, Mr. Marks, since we passed our fiscal year starts July 1st, and not in the best case scenario, federal government October 1st, if they would pass the budget, since we've passed ours, what if we adopt a particular budget and we're anticipating $1 million for a particular program? And then the federal government, when they pass it in that particular year, give us $1,100,000, an increase or a decrease. What do the agencies do with that extra money since we've appropriated $1 million?
Mr. Chair, I think that'd be a good question to ask an agency.
Okay.
If you want to do that now or do you want to do that later?
Well, that's somewhere on the line. Let's have that as a question down the line, because I know we're going on estimates. And you do the estimates even when the governor submits his budget in February, what this is going to be, and we assume that, including the TANF estimates and so forth. So some agencies that may not be a big number, and in some agencies, Health and Human Services, that might be a large number or a small number, either up or down. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, to some extent, that's the kind of process that we see with the LAC process and so on that we'll discuss a little bit later. To the extent there are increases at least that weren't expected, that may come through the LAC process.
Okay, other questions? All right. Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Chair, then Helen Roberts is going to talk a little about the FTE information.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. Not sure if you can see this chart, but this, the first chart I'm looking at is one with the pie chart on top, and then there's some footnotes at the bottom. I'm very briefly just going to talk about the full-time equivalents, or FTE, that are supported by federal funds. The pie chart here uses third quarter FTE data that is reported by the Department of Finance. They report quarterly on full-time equivalents, and all of that data is on their website. You can see from the pie chart that for the third quarter, the state had 34,610 FTE. I should note that the state agencies and the judicial branch only that are included in the FTE reporting. It does not include the legislature or the University of Minnesota or Main Street. And of that total, almost 9% are directly supported by federal funds. But as Mr. Marks noted, there's some difficulty in tracking the impact of federal funds and how they flow. And so what this chart won't include, for example, is the Department of Transportation employees who are supported by the Trunk Highway Fund, who receives quite a bit of revenue from federal funds. So the point is that the 9% is probably understated. There's other examples I could point to. Employees, for example, in internal service funds, for example, at the Office of Enterprise Technology, all of those internal service funds have a portion of their funding from federal funds, but those FTEs are not included in the federal twice on this chart. The second chart we're going to look at shows just some, and again, you won't be able to see really the detail on this, and I apologize for the numbers being so small. Again, full-time equivalents that are directly supported by federal funds from 2001 to 2007. And if you look at the bar chart at the bottom, showing the total data, you can see that these FTE directly supported by federal funds, there was sort of a peak around fiscal year 2003, 2004, and then those numbers have dropped off slightly. But that's a total number. If you look within the detail for different agencies, you'll see many different pictures. For example, Department of Military Affairs has actually increased from 182.4 FTE to 214.3 FTE, supported by federal funds during that period. The Public Safety Department is one that looks like it sort of mirrors this curve. So we would really have to look at, if you have questions about what's going on within an individual agency, you'd have to dig down more into the detail of what's happening there. And then the
Ms. Roberts, maybe, well, why don't I let you finish your testimony first?
Okay. And then the final chart is simply showing ranked by percentage, both agencies that have a percentage of their FTE federal funds. You can see the first column shows the total FTE for the agency. The second column is the numbers show that the FTE is directly supported by federal funds, and then the percentage. And the Department of Employment and Economic Development is the agency with the highest percentage. Again, transportation shows very low on the curve, but that's due to the difficulty of isolating the impact within the Trunk Highway Fund. And I think one agency that I was interested in knowing with Human Services, they show a relatively, well, quite a small percentage when we know that they received a great deal of federal funds, but I think we were speculating that that's because most of those funds are pass-through grants. But I don't know if the agency would have any serious comments on that.
Just on that question, if an agency, let's say a Department of Human Services or any particular agency, receives some funds in the agency and pass them through counties or for a particular program, are they allowed to take some money off of that for administering that particular program?
Mr. Chair, I think in most cases the federal government allows some sort of administrative amount to be taken off, but that can be specific to each program. And again, there may be federal grants that do not allow it, where the state has to administer it if they accept the money. But I think many of them do allow a portion of that money to be used for administrative costs.
And if they allow a portion of that to be used for administrative costs, does the department track that and assign it to federal funds? In your chart where you have the general fund, the federal fund, and all others, Is that a mixture of it, or what I'm saying is, well, I would just take anybody as, let's say, a commissioner of as part of the administration of a particular department. Are they able to take, 2% of the commissioner's salary off from federal funds as part of it? And if they do, how is that tracked? Is it, does he become a 2% federal employee type thing, or federal money?
Exactly. There is the ability to sort of portion up an FTE or a person's salary and assign it to different funds if they work in different areas, and that portion of their time work would go up, a portion of it for federal funds, a portion of it for the general funds, et cetera.
And does your chart then include that particular money, let's say, in when we had a peak in 2003 and 2004, was that directly federal funds, or was that federal funds that were proportioned as well? Or are these strictly, I'm an employee and I must get all of my salary from the federal government on that chart?
Mr. Chair, I believe it would include both employees that are fully funded by federal funds and those that have a portion of their salary, because of the way that FTE reporting system works. There's the portion of that person's time that was funded by federal funds would show up in the federal fund portion, and the other portion would show up in whatever additional fund they were, their salary is being funded by.
Mr. Chair, probably another good question for someone in an agency, but I think it's a bit of an art in an agency to make sure you can fund everybody, and you may be attributing portions of individual salaries to any number of funds depending on the kinds of programs that person is working with, and I'm not sure about a commissioner position, but that could be a good example of an agency that manages a variety of different funds. They might, I don't know what the rules are, but they might allow that commissioner's salary might be a portion mostly the general fund and some portion to this fund and some portion of this fund to the extent they administer those funds.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, President Carlson.
If they're allocating those positions and if I know the federal government periodically does an audit, would they have to account for that time? Let's say that you're a commissioner and you say that 20% of your salary is covered by the feds, then would you actually have to somehow document or show that you're making that kind of an effort?
The Chair, Representative Carlson, I'm sure they do. In a federal audit, they would have to account for where all the federal funds are going and the extent of a person's time that is being attributed to it.
So Mr. Chair, the point being that they just can't sort of willy-nilly decide that a given position is going to be funded by the feds unless they're actually producing some time for the federal program that would match the dollars coming in.
Mm-hmm. But being a head of an agency also, if I have someone underneath me, I'm automatically supervising that. So
Mr. Chair, maybe the head of the agency isn't the best example, but somebody at a mid-level management position would probably...
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. Frank Gutherson from Finance is somebody, but do you want to get somebody to respond to that issue right now as we're on it?
Sure. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Gutherson. Maybe you can identify yourself for the tape. And thanks for coming over on a Friday afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, Brent Gustafson from the Department of Finance. Happy to be here. The question of FTE reporting and time allocation is a significant one, and the points you and Representative Carlson are making are certainly on point, that individual time can be split and allocated out to different funding sources, whole positions could be, and you're right in the sense that an individual time and work effort, the job description need to be tied to that federal funding source. Another common arrangement that's not necessarily grant-specific, say an individual grant or something you may see in one of these reports may have FTEs tied to it, but the other significant aspect of federal money for state staffing is in something known as indirect costs, where sort of general overhead operations of an agency or the general overhead operations of state government, things like the Department of Finance, where time is essentially billable to federal grants, and federal grant programs allow a portion of the grant, either percentage or a dollar amount, to be attributable to indirect costs, the recognition that the state is going to incur overhead for things like finance and human resources that are important and necessary for carrying out the functions of that grant. And I guess I can give you an individual example. When I report my time on a biweekly basis, I attribute a portion of it as allowable or not allowable for indirect costs, and that is subject to a federal audit. As an individual in a central overhead agency, is my time allowable in the eyes of the federal government for general financial oversight of the state's resources? And much of my time is billable to the federal government for those purposes. And that's a common arrangement and an allowable cost for many federal resources.
Just for curiosity, maybe you want to use yourself or some other person as an example, would that indirect cost be like in the area of 10% or 30%, or how do you determine what your time spent is billable to that? Because obviously the federal government has an audit process in place.
Mr. Chairman, I would probably have to get back to you on the range. I think the allowable indirect cost rate varies by individual federal grant program, and also, say, within an agency, the Department of Education has a different indirect cost rate than the Department of Health has, and I don't have that information.
Maybe if you can provide that to the staff, they can give that to us. That'd be very interesting. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as we get into this, other questions come up, but let's say an employee's salary is 50% covered by the feds and 25% by the state, and they're a state employee. How do you allocate fringe benefits? You know, the rule of thumb is that about 25% of the cost of putting an employee online is pension, health insurance, and other related fringes. Is that allocated as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, my understanding is the basis of that allocation is what we refer to as total compensation. So essentially the cost to the employer is allocated out, and how it hits the employee is going to differ by employee in terms of salary and fringe, but the cost to the employer is total compensation, and that's the basis that those allocations occur.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Gustin, thank you. Appreciate that. There may be other questions that you can answer if you come through. Helen, thank you for this. Appreciate it. Bill?
Mr. Chair, members, then I wanted to move into the area of what the legislature's role is in the federal funds. And I'm going to use this publication that has a cover on that looks like what I'm putting up on the TV screen, says Legislative Review of State Agency Requests to Spend Federal Funds. This is a publication that we prepared before, but it was updated just last month. So, and it's looking at the legislature's role in federal fund review and approval. And I'll basically run through or highlight a number of items in here. The governor and state agencies are authorized to receive federal funds made available to the state by the federal government. And that's a section in state law, Chapter 4.07. And then those funds are appropriated to the agencies after a review by the legislature. And that legislative review is basically what we call the LAC, or the Legislative Advisory Commission process. The standard process, or what's the most desired process for legislative review or of federal funds, is that the governor submits federal fund spending requests as part of the budget requests that arrive in the fourth Tuesday in January. So the budget documents that finance divisions that the legislature receives from state agencies, or from the governor, but prepared by state agencies, often include federal fund spending requests. And just as a reference here, there is a packet in your folders that says on the top, examples of federal funds information submitted as part of the governor's budget recommendations in January 2007.
And members, I think this is probably the meat of the meeting today, on this particular thing right here. So if you can get that, so Bill can kind of walk us through that particular document.
So this what I have attempted to do here is just pull samples. I tried to get an agency that's in each finance division. So most finance divisions are represented here. And I've just pulled pages out of the budget books, out of the budget documents that we received in January. So, like, for example, the first one here says Agriculture Department, and it's listed as pages 64 through 70. That was pages 64 through 70 in the Department of Agriculture's budget documents back in January. And then just summarize that the Department of Agriculture has listed about 50 different federal funds items here. I've also included the same kind of information for the Department of Commerce, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Department of Health, the Higher Education Services Office, the Office of Higher Education, and then Human Services Department, Military Affairs Department, the Pollution Control Agency. The Public Safety Department here includes the Public Safety Finance Division portion. I don't have the Transportation Department's or Transportation Finance Division portion in here, and then the Department of Transportation. So what's in here is you'll find that there are different ways of presenting the information. Generally, there's a chart included that shows funding for roughly a four-year period, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009. Some agencies include a lot more descriptive information than others do.
Mr. Marks, can you spend a little time on that and give us some examples? I think the Department of Public Safety is one where the description is quite extensive. Legislature.
Mr. Chair, if you look at the Department of Public Safety, which, and I realize the page numbers don't work here, but the Department of Public Safety has a program description for each program, and then also has a bit of description of what the money can be spent for, and then has a separate chart showing the dollars involved here. They have a fairly, probably the most extensive description of the kind of information provided in the budget document. Different example, if you look at the Ag Department, the first one, the Ag Department provides a summary of a general summary of what federal funds can be used for on one page, and then has a specific list. I should also mention at this point that we're going to take a bit of time to look at two agencies in a little more detail, the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Education, and Jim Reinholtz and Greg Crow will be going into more specifics on those, and that's why also they're not included in this particular packet. So we'll get a little bit more specific information in a few minutes on those two agencies.
Mr. Markell, these are the documents that are included in the budget books that we received in February sometime.
In January. Fourth Tuesday in January.
But okay.
The other thing I'd mention is that when the governor submits supplemental budget information later in the session, there may be changes in these or additions to these or deletions if an agency knows they're no longer going to get federal money. So during the legislative session, we do receive this information. I'll go back to the publication document and just talk about the process a little bit during the legislative session. This information is submitted as part of a budget document or part of a supplemental budget request. The law does say the requests have to be submitted at least 20 days before legislative deadline for action on fiscal bills. And the reason there is that if information is submitted later in the session, finance committees may not be meeting anymore. There may not be an opportunity to review it, or if the legislature wanted to make some changes in it or give some specific direction regarding that federal funds, it might be too late to put language in a bill. So there is a deadline, 20 days before the deadline for committee action on fiscal bills. That could have been a bit of a problem last session because, if you may recall, the House and Senate had different deadlines for fiscal bills. So that was something not anticipated when the law was written. Once that request has been submitted to the legislature, then the legislature has 20 calendar days, to review the request, and possibly request further review of that federal fund spending request, or actually, basically to ask for more time to look at it. If the legislature, and this is the legislature in this case would be members of the Legislative Advisory Commission, which are designated in law, and there are 6 members in the House. It's the Speaker, the Ways and Means Chair, and the Chair of the Finance Division that would handle that account. And in the Senate, it's the Majority Leader, the Finance Committee Chair, and again, the Chair of the Budget Division that would handle that account. If any of those legislators have not objected or asked for further review within that 20-day window, then the agencies are free to go ahead and spend the money. Now, that may not be possible because in most cases that we're looking at money for the next 2 fiscal years, and the time frame hasn't really started yet to spend the money.
So, Mr. Marks, the key in that then for legislative review in the 20 days is really, in effect, the fiscal committee and the committee chair. I don't think the Speaker and probably myself go through all these books and look and say, well, I want to object to this one. But the committee has a responsibility within that length of time, and the committee chair is, fiscal chair is part of the LAC as well. If there is some questions on it, for them to raise those objections within that 20 days. Is that a correct assessment?
Mr. Chair, to raise objections or simply to ask for further review. It may not be objecting. It may be saying we want to review this further.
Okay. And if they just ask for review or further, does that then extend the time?
Mr. Chair, the provision in law basically says that if further review is asked for, that could extend the time until after the legislature adjourns the regular session that year.
Okay.
So, I mean, the example here would, or the maybe to take it to the extreme example here, if a legislative committee did not want an agency to spend a certain, did not want the agency to receive a certain federal grant, under the provisions currently in law, that the agency can apply for the grant, receive the money, and it is appropriated with the provisions here for legislative review. If the legislature does not want that grant to be received by whatever agency it is, to make absolutely sure that doesn't happen, the provision actually would need to be enacted in law. And it may not need to go that far. If legislators express concerns, the executive branch may decide, okay, we're not going to go ahead with this. But if there's a philosophical disagreement between the legislature and the executive branch on this, current law gives the executive branch the ability to accept the funds and spend the funds with the legislative review. And in order to make sure it doesn't happen, the legislature would need to pass a law saying, don't accept these funds.
And there's a couple of different exceptions to that. One of them is a federal mandate, is there not? The Brown Amendment?
Yes.
And I'm going to get into that.
I'll get into those a little later.
Okay.
So but that's the simple concept here is that federal funds are, the executive branch is authorized to apply for grants and receive federal funds. The federal funds are appropriated with legislative review. I mean, that's the simple concept. And then when the legislature is in session, that application process is basically part of the governor's budget submission process. Bottom of page 1 in here describes what happens when the legislature is not in session. And there are basically two or three criteria for submitting or for reviewing federal fund requests in the interim. And the first one described on the top of page 2 is that by October 1st of each year, the Commissioner of Finance can submit state agency requests to spend federal funds, basically federal fund spending requests that have accumulated since late in that legislative session.
In the legislative session, when you say late in the legislative session, that would be mainly the first deadline or the first
day before the deadline for finance.
Okay.
So from that period forward, if new requests come in, there's really no process for submitting them until October 1st, with an exception, a couple exceptions that I'll get into in a minute. With the October 1st submission, the members of the LAC have 20 days to review the request. If any LAC member makes a negative recommendation or requests further review, then that essentially puts that request on hold, and it can be submitted again as part of a governor's budget request the next session, or it could be dropped. But the law is probably strongest in this case, and it's basically a forcing a situation where the legislative committees can actually review. It puts time in there as for the legislature to get back into session and actually review these requests so that the legislature could take some formal action in a bill if that was the desire. So this October submission process was something that was probably added within the last 10 years, and it was basically a way to allow agencies to get these requests in without waiting until the next legislative session for basically what are a lot of routine requests in many cases.
And do we have an example of this October, how many were in that?
We have some examples here, and I'll also get to those in just a minute.
Very good.
Then the other process in the interim, and this is in the second paragraph on page 2, is that a request to spend federal money could be submitted at any time during the interim in two different situations. One is when an urgency exists. It's when federal funds become available that could not have been anticipated during the session, and an urgency requests that money really needs to be used very soon, and I'll have some examples of that have happened during this interim. Or the second one, and this situation doesn't get used very often, a request to spend federal money was included in the governor's budget request and essentially already approved, but now a greater state match is being required. So those two provisions could allow a request to come in at any time. And In the second process, this urgency one, or the increase in the match, the LAC members have 10 days to act. And if no recommendation is made, it's assumed as positive. If a request for, if a negative recommendation, if an LAC member says, no, we don't think you should accept this, or if they ask for further review, the Legislative Advisory Commission may actually meet. And that would be up to the executive branch, up to the governor, the commissioner of finance to call that meeting. And the LAC could meet and review this, discuss it, and take action. A point again here, the LAC action is advisory. It's advice to the governor under the existing law. The governor already has the authority to direct the executive branch to accept the money and to spend the money. So it's an advisory role, even if it gets to the point of the LAC actually meeting. The LAC, for this purpose, rarely meets. I recall two meetings in the last 10 years or so, and none of them have been in the last 3 or 4 years.
Has there been times when the LAC has said no to the governor, and the governor has accepted their advice or not accepted their advice?
Mr. Chair, I've been in this position 11 years, and I don't recall that. I recall a situation where a couple members of the LAC recommended no. The LAC met and basically said, the majority of the LAC members said go ahead, and they went ahead. I don't recall where the majority of the LAC ever said no.
How about in the case, and I'll use the same, where the chair of the Ways, a former chair of the Ways and Means, there was a request coming in, and he said, I'm okay for the first year, but not the second year submitted.
The chair, it's a good example. I wasn't thinking of that one. And that is a case where I believe this may have been either with the October submission or with some urgent requests, that the request initially was for 2 or 3 years of federal funding. And at least one of the LAC members said, we don't understand. It was an urgent request. We don't understand. We can understand why the first year would be urgent, but we don't understand why the second year would be urgent because the legislature will be in session. And the Commissioner of Finance and the Governor accepted that recommendation. They approved the first year, but not the second year.
Okay.
And that would have been, 6 or 7 years ago, I believe.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
We'll get to the examples of what's happened this interim in a couple minutes. I want to go through the rest of this publication, and then we'll then talk a little bit about those specific what's happened since the end of session. The bottom of page 2 is just pointing out how federal funds get appropriated. The first paragraph basically is that federal funds are, for the most part, are deposited in the state treasury and then come under the condition that the Constitution requires that no money may be paid out of the treasury without an appropriation. There's general language, it's in Chapter 4, where the governor's powers are in statute that appropriates money to state agencies, appropriates federal money to state agencies for the purposes for which they are received. And that's a statutory appropriation. And most federal funds, most but not all, are appropriated under that language. The one caveat there is that the LAC, the review process is a requirement there. Some federal funds are appropriated specifically in other bills or in other language in law, and as an example, federal funds received by the Higher Education Services Office also have a specific statutory appropriation for them. It's in Chapter 136A. Top of page 3, outlining a few other things, the education finance bill for a number of years has included language basically acknowledging the federal funds and then appropriating them. The specific language says the expenditure of federal grants and aids as shown in the biennial budget document and its supplements are approved and appropriated and shall be spent as indicated. Then there's this other issue which I've alluded to earlier that some federal funds come into the state and go to other places, like federal highway funds get deposited in the trunk highway fund, and then basically become part of the trunk highway fund and are part of that highway fund appropriation. And that's, as an example here, the highway appropriation, or the trunk highway appropriation, is a direct appropriation that's included in the transportation finance bill. Another example I mentioned here, a much smaller one, is that there is some federal money that comes in for game and fish purposes and gets deposited in the game and fish fund, and then is, we think, part of a direct appropriation out of the game and fish fund in the environment finance bill. So generally, most federal funds are appropriated under that statutory appropriation, but there are a few exceptions, and some federal funds get handled different ways. And the trunk highway fund, if you think about it, once the federal dollars go in there and state dollars from motor vehicle excise tax or gas tax are coming in, they kind of all end up in the same pot and then are appropriated from that pot. So it's a bit different way of appropriating them. I mentioned here a process which most of you are probably familiar with. The process in the transportation bill has set up a special group that has become called the Transportation Contingent Appropriation Advisory Group. It's the LAC members plus two additional members, the ranking minority members of the House and Senate Transportation Finance Committees. And the language in that law talks about that this group must give approval to, and then unappropriated balances, and they may give approval to the appropriation of unappropriated balances in the Trump Highway Fund, and the assumption is those unappropriated balances could include federal money. So that group, which has been meeting for a couple months, is looking at the unappropriated balances in the Trunk Highway Fund. The other issue, or the other one I wanted to note here, the fourth paragraph on page 3, is the other category would be TANF funds, the Federal Funds for Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. The language of the federal law included a statement that says any funds received by a state under the provisions of law specified in Subdivision B, and Subdivision B includes TANF, shall be subject to appropriation by the state legislature. We think that's the reason because of, and that was called the Brown Amendment when it was put in place in the late 90s at the federal level. That's the reason that TANF funds are appropriated directly in the Health and Human Services Bill. They're not appropriated under the statutory appropriation. There's a direct appropriation of those monies. TANF also tends to be, or is a federal grant that probably provides as much flexibility as any federal grant to the state in deciding where that money goes. It has to go for the broad purposes of the program, but there are a number of different specific purposes that it is used for, and the legislature here has had discussions on that over the years of whether TANF funds ought to go here or here or here. And there's a fairly significant amount of flexibility in allowing what the purposes are there. There are also requirements that are called maintenance of efforts that have to be met and go into that calculation.
Has there ever been any incidences that you know of where the federal government or the legislature, either us or other legislative bodies, have appropriated TANF monies for a particular program and the federal government said that's not appropriate? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair,
maybe they would know that in our case.
I'm looking to experts and not seeing an affirmative nod at this point.
Okay.
We try. Perhaps they can talk about it and get back.
Well, I think that there's been some self-discipline within the legislative branch as well, and the agencies on saying this is appropriate or not appropriate. But I'm wondering, we have flexibility in TANF funds, but there's also some strong guidelines that the federal government, I can't spend TANF funds to hunt deer and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's an extreme case, but I mean within that categories. And who determines the categories? I mean, whether or not you can have TANF funds for a health and human services or a human services issue, let's say helping homelessness, but we've had guidelines from the agency saying, well, that's not an appropriate use of TANF funds. Do we have written guidelines, or is that a judgment call, or has the federal government come in and said, no, that's not appropriate? Who determines that something is not appropriate for the use of TANF funds? And Mr. Gustin, welcome again.
Mr. Chairman, Brent Gustafson from the Department of Finance again. A really good question about TANF and its allowable uses. Many of those around the table have been around to know that TANF has been used for a variety of purposes in this state, and the allowable purposes from the standpoint of the federal government have evolved over time. And so the question you're asking is certainly a good one, and trying to draw bright lines around that has not been easy over the years. One of the other challenges that exists on TANF and other federal resources is at times that it is difficult to obtain a clear answer from the federal government if something is not squarely within the purposes. Now, there are a number of federal guidelines, federal rules that define these, and states make their best guess as to what state programs align with that definition in federal law or federal regulations. It is often difficult to get an affirmative answer on the front end. Can we do X, Y, or Z? And often these questions sort out over years through federal audits, federal disallowances. They're not common. And I know we were having a hard time trying to think of examples as Minnesota or other states had experience with specific items being deemed unallowable. Some of these resources are harder to claim, and there are additional documentation requirements, for example, that may be required. And so there are any number of ways that it may be more or less difficult, but it is gray on the edges in terms of what is clearly within the purposes or not. And I think we have worked with the Department of Human Services and with legislative staff to try to have common understandings of what types of state expenditures, what current state programs or what modifications to state programs would fit or would. But I think you're onto the point that it is a less than black and white and also an evolving topic.
Publox, have we ever had to pay back funds, or if we appropriate funds or for a purpose that's not allowed, is that become a state responsibility then?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know of any TANF-specific things we may have had to pay back. I could get back to you if I find out otherwise. But to the extent a state has made expenditures of federal money that is not allowable, that is a state obligation.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this special process in law that was put in the transportation bill, is that unusual, or is that something that's always done, or is it infrequently done, or how did it happen to appear here in such a choice year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, there's been a special process in the transportation bill, I believe, since 1997. Two changes were made in the 2007 legislation, one adding the two ranking minority members, the other adding the approval of the of this group rather than the advice of this group. So this is relatively, it's new, and I'd say it's relatively unique. I'm not aware of the approval requirement in other places regarding this.
But it's also just the federal monies, as you stated earlier, are not deposited in the traditional way into the general fund, but are put into the transportation account, and that requires a black action of the legislature to appropriate that fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, they're not deposited in the federal fund like others are. Because they're in a different fund, the Trunk Highway Fund, I think an argument can certainly be made that requires a direct appropriation of that money like other Trunk Highway Fund money is appropriated.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Carlson?
Probably, sorry, I didn't get the gentleman's name.
Mr. Gustafson.
With the discussion of TANF, it made me think of some discussions that we've had in some of the funding committees historically, that's maintenance of effort. And has Minnesota ever ran into any difficulties with supplementing federal funds and then capturing the savings on the state appropriation side? One of the areas I'm thinking of is student financial aid, where federal law says there has to be a maintenance of effort and assigns the state as taking those savings, let's say when Pell grants are increased, and use that money differently. And then we've got a discussion about maintenance of effort. Comments on that. Maybe not that program specifically, but just the general issue of how they define maintenance of effort.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, maintenance effort is going to vary by federal program. The general idea, that, as I have best understood it, is that the federal government, when it creates a, when it provides a resource to a state, be it TANF or the student aid money reference, their expectation is that that's new money and that a state continue to do what it was doing previously. Words like supplantation or non-supplantation often accompany that type of language, where a maintenance of a state's effort is expected. Similarly, some state programs have county maintenance of effort expectations or requirements that a appropriation is intended to be totally new and additional resources. To the question of has the state run into challenges in that, I think one of the aspects of state budgeting over the years has been to meet maintenance effort, but if not necessary, to not exceed that. I think about some of the TANF budgeting where, as a matter of state budget practice, we have essentially, when possible, budgeted maintenance effort at its minimal level as required by the federal government. That is, we will meet the maintenance effort requirement in order to access the federal money, and that's the amount necessary to access the federal block grant. So I don't know if that specifically gets at your question, but that's my best understanding of it.
Chairman, if I understand what you're saying, then maintenance of effort wouldn't necessarily mean the same dollar amount. It would be meeting the standards that are set rather than the dollar amount. Am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that's correct. And again, it varies by program how it's defined. In the case of TANF, it was pegged to a specific year and a percentage of a specific year's spending. And so that's not that's a known amount for the course of the years of the TANF program, but how it's defined, how it's calculated, those things often vary by program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marks, about 10 years ago, we mandated a 10% ethanol blend, and for years, we were being penalized with federal funds for not using fossil fuel, where we get remuneration from the federal government in our formula for our highways. Since that time, the federal government saw the errors of their ways, and they started giving us a certain amount of money. I'd like to know how much money that is, and is it being used as a form of gas tax money and going for county and city state aid roads, or where is that money being used at?
Mr. Tarrant, Representative, I'm not sure of that one. I don't know if there's somebody from DOC here. I'm not sure if he knows the answer either at this point here. So if we need to get back to you on that one.
I can give you a general impression.
Would you join us at the table? We like general impressions. Welcome to the committee, and if you would identify yourself for the seat, please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Scott Peterson. I'm the Director of Finance at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. To the question, as I understand it, what impact has the change in the treatment of ethanol-treated motor vehicle fuel had on the federal funds that come back to Minnesota? At one time, we estimated the ethanol penalty to be in the neighborhood of $70 million.
How much?
$70
million. A year,
that's correct. And that's been several years ago since we made that estimate, and that change has roughly been in effect since Safety Lou was passed. And as a result, the actual impact of the change in the treatment of ethanol versus the overall change in funding levels and program funding in federal highway funds makes it hard to separate out exactly what the amount or the impact of the change has been. But when Safety Lou was passed, Minnesota received one of the highest percentage increases of federal highway funds among all the states in the country, I think.
And we received that because of making up that penalty, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The primary reason for the fact that Minnesota received a disproportionately higher increase was largely due to the ethanol, the change in the treatment of ethanol.
And Mr. Gunther asked, I think, the question, how is that being treated for the counties and so forth? Right, Bob, your basic question, how does that...
My question was, how much was it? And I think it should be rather easy to extrapolate that based on what we got before and what we're getting now, and you say they're mixing all the funds up. You can determine how much we should have had and somehow work back to the amount of money we're getting. It would be interesting to find out how big a penalty that was. And I'd also like to know what it's being used for. In a way, you can say that is gas tax money. And gas tax money, as well as license tab money, is the only money we can use for county and city state aid road projects. And if that's what it's in fact being used for or what they're doing, I'd like to know the answer to that. Neither today or some other time, doesn't matter.
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, the way the treatment of ethanol affected the federal funds that came back to Minnesota was it affected our contributions to the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Minnesota's contributions are part then of a formula that determines the rate at which federal highway funds are distributed to the state of Minnesota. And all those formula funds come to the state, and for the most part, they are distributed to different districts in the state, and the ultimate spending of those funds is determined by the area transportation partnerships in each district. And they go to
construction. Mr. Peterson, it's my understanding there's no federal money, no federal gas tax money that flows to the counties directly under the formula. Is that correct? Or that's state gas tax money. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. The federal funds only go to local road projects through the ATP process, Area Transportation Partnership process, with the exception of course, earmarked funding for projects.
Mr. Gunther, did you get your question answered, or do you want some additional information?
I think he knows what I want to find out, and he'll get back to me.
Very good.
Mary Lynn?
Chumper, then Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like Mr. Peterson to say it once more, if he could.
One more time.
So with the original ethanol mandate, which we're spending between 20 and 30 million a year in our state or in a biennium subsidizing ethanol, we were also then forfeiting about $70 million because of this transportation. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair, Representative? That was our estimate at one time. And again, because of the formulas and the way it impacts different funding that comes back to the state, it's really not terribly transparent, to estimate an exact value. I mean, we spent a lot of time and effort on it. In fact, I was one of the people that worked on it primarily at the time, and this was, well, 6 or 7 years ago anyway.
When did it get switched around?
There were two pieces of legislation that passed Congress about the time that Safety Lou was enacted, our current highway authorization bill. One was a tax change, which basically transferred the subsidy for ethanol production at the federal level from the gas tax to the income tax. It gave producers a tax income tax credit, and then it changed the per gallon tax rate on ethanol to the same rate as that on gasoline.
What year was that?
2002?
No, it was
before that.
My recollection, Mr. Chair, my recollection was that it was the summer of 2004. And with the beginning of Safety Lou, like I said before, that.
Mr. Peterson, how did the states, because our mandate for ethanol started out because of the pollution that was taking place at University and Snelling. I mean, we've been around long enough to know that, and I probably sitting in this room, we had huge debates over what kind of oxygenation we should mandate to put into the gas to solve the pollution problem. And the debate was over whether we add mandate ethanol, and it was a mandate for the metropolitan area in the summertime only to begin with. It was a pollution thing, an oxygenation thing, as opposed to the other additive that we had a choice of, MBTE or something like that, which then obviously has had a great deal of health problems in states. Those states that went the other route, other than the ethanol route, were they penalized as well for their additive?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not really sure. We didn't pay as much attention to that since it didn't seem to affect us. But on the other hand, I've never heard or read any information that would suggest that they did suffer penalties.
Okay. And now we're paying to help clean up their mess. Let's see. Representative Holbrook, you had your question.
Mr. kind of worked around it, but basically, given the 10% of our fuel is ethanol and we weren't getting any gas tax revenues, they fixed that, all the ethanol fixed.
Very good.
So we should be on even plane, but it was hundreds of millions of dollars over the years that we lost. And it's treated like the other federal funds.
Other questions? Representative Gunther, do you have?
I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And if there's some additional information, you can get that. Mr. Mark?
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, then I'd like to move to the, there's a handout that says request to review federal funding
federal spending received since the end of the 2007 regular legislative session.
And do members have that in your packet?
These will be the specific requests that have come in since the end of the 2007 session. What's included in here in this packet are the cover pages for each of those requests. I didn't reproduce all the detailed information. I do have that if anybody would want to look at it. But I mentioned that there were several urgent requests, and you can see that they're listed on the cover page there. There were three of them. June 5th, a request from the Department of Transportation for the reheat speeding campaign for extra enforcement. And it was $150,000 that was going to be received yet in fiscal year 2007. That would be prior to the June 30th of 2007, and then $1,350,000 in fiscal year 2008. July 26th, a request from Department of Natural Resources. This was $250,000. It was actually related to the Ham Lake Fire mitigation on the Gunflint Trail. And then on August 15th, from the Department of Agriculture, a request for $148,800 for teaching integrated pest management. These requests were received. No objections were raised. No objections or requests for further review were raised by any members of the Legislative Advisory Commission. So those were all approved probably shortly after the 10-day period after which the request was made. Then the set here of the October 1st request, there's a couple pages here. They totaled, there's actually a correct, there are two letters from Commissioner Tom Hansen. The first one dated October 1st, the second one dated October 5th with some corrected numbers. But they totaled $58.96 million, so a fairly substantial amount of money. And in here, in your packet, is a two-page list of those different requests by agency. It starts off with the Department of Education, the Perfect Center for the Arts has one, Health Department, Human Services Department, Natural Resources, the Water and Soil Resources Board, the Public Safety Department, Transportation Department, and Public Safety here is split into two because some of it's in our Transportation Finance Division, some in the Public Safety Division. So those requests are all listed here. Again, we received more detail on those, which I didn't include in these packets. And then I also included on here that another request, which isn't exactly an LAC request, but it's a transportation request. And it just shows you what the document looked like. It was addressed to the LAC by Commissioner Hansen, but it also included the ranking minority members of the Transportation Committee. And this was the September 20th request for the $195 million related to the I-35W bridge collapse, which, as I mentioned, has been discussed in a separate committee, not the Legislative Advisory Commission, but the what's been called the Transportation Contingent Appropriation Group. And since the time that I prepared these materials, there was actually another request from the Commissioner of Finance for the Transportation Contingent Appropriation Advisory Group approved $60 million of the $195 million request. Since then, I believe it was dated November 6th, there was an additional request for $135 million, which the Transportation Contingent Appropriation Group discussed yesterday but did not act on. So that's the extent of the requests that we have received since the end of the legislative session. And I should also mention on the October 1st request, there were no objections to any of those or requests for further review, so those have all been approved.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Rice.
Otherwise, Mr. Reinholz is going to talk a little bit about the Department of Natural Resources.
And members, I asked fiscal staff to give us a department review, and Department of Natural Resources, I think, is one that gets a lot of dedicated accounts, but they're not necessarily large amounts of money. But we generally appropriate those. They usually go through the account, as opposed to TANF money, which is, you know, kind of a gray area. These are more dedicated, but specific. And so, Mr. Reinhardt, if you can lead us through your material. We even got colored ones. Lead us through your material. We even got colored ones this time, huh?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Reinholz, I'm the fiscal analyst for for the house in the Environment Natural Resource Area. Yes, I have a package that you should have that begins with a cover chart. This is information that anyone can access on the Department of Finance website. It's part of the Enterprise Management Report, and I put it out here just to give you a sort of a large picture view of what the federal funds mean to the Department of Natural Resources. This is the budgeted expenditures for the current fiscal year 2008 in the Department of Natural Resources, and broken down by the fund at the fund level. The dark green is the federal money, $19.9 million, 4.9% of the estimated budgeted expenditures in the Department of Natural Resources for this year. This would be a good time to point out, as Mr. Marks has said, there are certain funds within the state budget that come in from the federal government and immediately get deposited into other funds. The Department of Natural Resources has some significant money that is treated that way. That does not show up on here. It's approximately another $20 million that then shows up on here because this is expenditures that shows up in the Game and Fish Fund. Those are the monies that you probably have commonly heard referred to as the Dingell Johnson or the Pittman Robertson dollars that come from the federal government into the state.
They would be in the yellow portion?
They would show up here in the yellow portion.
Very good.
And a little bit of it shows up in some of the natural resources money, too.
Very good.
And you'll see that in some of the further on in the portion of the handout I have divides out the actual dollars. So that just shows not a huge percentage of the DNR fund, but in certain areas, the game and fish operations, it is a significant portion. Then the next page moves on, and it's the same format. It's in the budget book. It's listed, the federal fund summary, by the department. In their case, I asked them to update these numbers. So these are numbers that are current as of just this week. The department was able to do that for me. The updated ones are slightly shaded in the 08, primarily in the 08 and the 09. I'm not sure if there was one or two 07s, I believe, that were updated. I could have done this in color. The department sent it in color, but we ran this off. The shading shows up on the chart, obviously, with all the different colors. You needed to be that way. I'll just point out, you can see some of these are ongoing at relatively consistent levels. That's one of the characteristics of some federal funds, mostly. Those are ones that have formula-driven and go on year for year, and the department can usually very accurately predict those. Other ones on here, you'll see some that are one-time only. Those are more often than not competitive grants the federal government has occasionally, and often during the budget hearings, the department doesn't even know if they're going to be awarded those. And those are the grants that typically come through the LAC process. They don't find out until the federal government awards them the competitive ones, so it's difficult to estimate. And those point out here when they're usually just be a 1 or 2 year expenditure item. If you move through the second page of the federal fund summary, it's just giving a short description. And this is, as Bill was, Mr. Marks was showing you, different agencies have different level of detail on how they display this in the budget. There's really very little guidelines in the budget documents from the Department of Finance. Natural resources has just the name used. It's usually what they're listed. Many of them are self-descriptive and would easily be known, commonly used in names. If you're on page 3 of that federal fund summary, I'll point out to you where those dollars from Dingell Johnson and Pittman Robertson are treated differently on here. If you look on that, the federal fund summary, page 3, on the line titles, the subtotal federal fund accounts, the second item there in fiscal year 08 is $25,799,000. Those are the revenues that would be then in the accounting system listed as federal revenues and expenditures. The department has then further broken out. The next line item is the sports fish restoration. That's the Dingell Johnson, the fishing one. That shows their estimate of $12.3 million there, and then the wildlife restoration is in there at $6.8 million. And then you see there, they even indicate that goes into the Game and Fish Fund. Federal receipts of $19.1 million is their estimate for 2008. And then there are some law con dollars. The next two items are law con dollars. Those are used for local grants for parks and trails primarily, and then state operations also has law con. Those go into the Natural Resources Fund.
Have we obeyed those monies out for the legislative action?
Chairman Solberg, yes, those dollars are directly appropriated by the legislature. Both the Game and Fish Fund receipts, primarily, there are some that are statutorily, some of the small pieces of that. The vast majority of Game and Fish funds are directly appropriated by the legislature, and the same holds true on the natural resources. Some are statutory, but the majority of the funds are directly appropriated, just as general fund dollars are.
Very good. Thank you. Question. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are these monies from federal for these purposes, are they fairly consistent on time and that sort of thing? I think of the Safety Lou transportation monies that dragged on for a year and a half or more before we began to receive the money, because they were arguing about how much and trying to compromise, and President was going to veto and all that. Do these monies come in on a regular basis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, they typically do. When the federal government has the same thing that's going on this year, where they haven't passed a budget, there has to be a continuing resolution of some sort in order for these monies to come forth. But typically, there's a significant balance also in the Game and Fish Fund, so the department has some, they really have some months of fudge too. But the department could tell me probably a little bit more, but I've never heard where they've had any problem with the funds not coming into the state in a timely manner.
Okay. And then we have just one more left, and that's Mr. Cole. Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Greg Crow. I'm the fiscal analyst for K-12 education. I put a couple of things in your packet. The first is this spreadsheet, which is similar to the spreadsheet that you've seen that came out of the budget books. This one just has some additional years. It's got about 12 years, 13 years worth of data going back to 1998. For the Department of Education, you can see that these are kind of grouped by types of federal revenue. If you look to the far column on the right, for fiscal 2009, the three biggest areas where the Department of Education gets federal funds, two are on the second page. One is in this category of ESEA, and there's about $220 million in that category. And that the largest piece in there is Title I funding that you've probably heard of. Then about two-thirds of the way down the page, you see $183 million for IDEIA, which is special education funding. Then the third biggest piece is on the bottom of page three. You can see that there's about $200 million from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for lunch and breakfast type funding from the federal government. So the top of the last page, you see that the state is at about $660 million estimated for FY09. For the Department of Education. And I've included this chart that kind of highlights what's happened in those five biggest programs over the years. And you can see the dark bar is Title I funding, which has basically stayed relatively flat in the $100 to $120 million range. The white bar is special education funding, which has grown, which grew between 1998 and 2005, and then has stayed flat over the last 5 years or so around the $200 million range. There's a couple of other programs, lunch programs, and then a grant for improving teacher quality that was actually instituted starting in fiscal 2003.
Mr. Gold, the No Child Left Behind Fund, do they flow directly to the school district?
Mr. Chair and members, the No Child Left Behind is kind of funded broadly through a large number of grants that flow differently. There isn't a line appropriation for No Child Left Behind. Basically, on the spreadsheet in pages 1 and 2, the ESEA funding that's indicated there that I mentioned includes Title I. Those funds are the No Child Left Behind funds. And as you can see, there's a significant history of funding in most of those programs. So prior to No Child Left Behind, those were programs that existed and were funded by the federal government, and now they're just kind of allocated as No Child Left Behind funds. Okay.
Other questions? And Mr. Crow, all of these funds are directly appropriated by the legislature. Is that correct in your bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, on that point, there's language in the K-12 education bill approving them. If that language wasn't there, though, these funds would be appropriated under the statutory appropriation and law. Right. So I wanted to clarify your direct appropriation comment.
Sure. Okay. Other questions? Mr. Marks, concluding remarks of any kind?
Mr. Chair, no, I think that's it.
Well, I want to personally thank each and every one of the fiscal people and the agency people for being around. This is an education process, and we probably need to have some more education as we go through. But hopefully we've started on this, and good job. Lots of work. Appreciate that very much. With that, the meeting is adjourned.